I know practices are not advocated, but it is so adamant to just sit in my bedroom at night before I go to sleep all by myself and without any control.
Yeah.
And just like, just immerse in it.
Uh-huh. You
know, I'm not meditating, I'm just sitting there going, oh, I'm alone. I love it. Quiet and alone. It's fucking heavenly.
I'd hardly call that a practice. Sounds pretty good, though.
I get the moon coming in my window a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I suppose some of it's just knowing that I'm going to, you know, pretty much sleep till I naturally wake up the next day. That helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I do sleep well. So, like, bedtime is... That's the simple thing.
Oh, yeah.
But it's more than just, yeah, it's nice, vibrant, gonna go to sleep. It's like bigger than that.
Yes.
No artificial distraction required.
That's lovely.
Mm.
How can I help?
It looks seriously saucy.
You don't like the smell?
He just goes out for the reason. And he comes in like a wild thing. I figured it wouldn't use up his energy to calm him down.
No.
Just ramped him up.
Didn't make that anyway.
What's going on here again?
That's
some
people meet up together.
Well,
maybe
sure.
You should just start at. Oh, wow. Oh.
You know, the craving that gets. Launched. From restless. Self-referencing. Is assuaged and organically quiesced as consciousness, if we have to call it anything. Becomes familiar with its own texture. And that residing or abiding replaces the restlessness of becoming. There's no longer a need for knowledge, spiritual practice, creation, meta-creation. The ruse of individuation is seen through. So that's a gift, right? A grace and a gift of unadorned self-sufficiency.
I read something to the effect of a life lived all about me is bound to be not a happy one because you're basically feeding the fiction. And I didn't get it quite right, but that was the gist of it. It was pretty good.
You know, Sufis and others make it appear as if God is other and oh so special that your chances of abiding are slim to none. And the best you can and should do is commit yourself to their horrible cosmology because you're impure. On whose authority are these awful religions founded? I'm sorry, who? Hello? Nothing. And nothing. If, you know, a religion or a founder of a religion or a priest or priestess or whomever of some religion starts establishing a or foments and furthers a cosmology that's based on some kind of supreme, omniscient, disembodied authority, that's a really good sign to leave a few dollars in the basket and get the hell out. And this is how the, you know, the culture of authority, which, of course, is typically misogynist and chauvinistic, keeps everybody in check, everybody in line. They convince you that you need to purify your soul due to your fundamental unworthiness to be exactly what this is, because God is other. Better, prior, above, and has the advantage. And I'm like, I'm sorry, who made this shit up?
It's a great story if you want to keep people in line. It works.
And it's a great story if you want to keep people, whatever. That's right. Second rate. And it's so easy, really, to keep, quote, people in line. It seems that we're just absurdly gullible, you know, which maybe, may be to our advantage in some respects, but is abused and exploited by authorities that want to keep you down for their own benefit. Any of these, you know, creatures out in the YouTube world or the non-dual world, instead of emphasizing the unadorned simplicity of self-discovery, just blow really hard on useless exoticisms to make it appear as if they have knowledge of things that you don't have, and that you're at a disadvantage because they see more clearly, more deeply, more authentically, more shamanically than you do. And not only are we duped so easily by this plethora of stupidity, we actually pay for it.
That's the, like, that's kind of seems to be almost like more the common denominator. It's just like all we seem to be capable of is exchanging coinage. That's like all we've been doing theoretically for a long time. It's like seashells, gold, dollar, spiritual, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I have something you don't have. Give me some money. I'll give it to you. That's nice. Like all we do. It's like, is there anything else?
Would you like some pizza for free? There's a vegan pizza with spinach, but I'm sure you'd rather have this one instead. You just lift the whole box up and pour it right into your throat.
The dragon.
Did you get a subsequent reply from him? I mean, after you sent it to us.
Yes.
What do you have to say?
No.
That's how they make pizza.
Well, it was characteristically disappointing. Which is the way most things go. The reply was cordial.
Cordial.
But basically said something like, I see and understand why you're pointing the conversation where you're pointing it, and let's let it stand there. Yeah. So it wasn't quite checkmate. It was more like, you know, an agreeable stalemate.
I guess. Why is it so hard to get it across? You know, I mean, why do people put up? Because they haven't encountered it before, it seems.
I wish I knew. And I don't know if it's so hard. I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, but it's not that it's hard to get it across. It's impossible to let it in.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. If I'm consciously or unconsciously, which is more common, the product of my own imagination and the product of the conformist reality that the social agreements permit me to have, well, I'm fucked. And, you know, to offer a no way way to the simplicity of being is simply refuted.
Just pulls the rug out. I mean,
my suspicion is that it truly satisfies the craving that one might claim that they're after or hoping to resolve. But the typical reply is, yeah, not yet. Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah. Oh, I can't just imagine myself to be there. Yeah. You know, I have more meta creation to do.
What happened in their living room? With you and a bunch, was it a bunch of women? A couple of women?
No.
In a living room?
Well, there was one other chick. Yeah, we just took our clothes off and we went down on this meta creation so hard.
Well, I didn't mean it like that, but.
Oh, I'm sorry. I went all James Franco on this.
Oh, man.
Now.
Well, you're male, apparently, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, the presentation was succinct and, you know, generously constructed, introducing the difference between, let's say, you know, human behavior and expectations and a more refined set of behavior and wisdom that a so-called realized or something kind of human would be in possession of. And so after that was, you know, shared, it was a little bit of conversation. I mean, I went...
What does that have to do with meta-creation? Because it sounds like just more of the same old, same old.
Well, it was a lead-up. It was, you know, kind of a foundation, maybe. So I breathed heavy or something, and the host was like, you know, did you want to say something? And I just said, I said, better not to. But she insisted, and I'm like, no, don't. But, I mean, everything was, you know, very cordial, and I just explained how it's really easy to imagine approaching the so-called enlightened state from the bias and filters of the human state, and it's possible they may have nothing to do with each other, or that in comparing, you know, human to better human, you might be sorely mistaken or disappointed. So she agreed in public, but later, you know, read me the riot act that was uncalled for, and a sign of my unenlightenment.
After the meeting?
Yeah. Well, I wrote to her a thank you, what I thought was a pleasant thank you note for her generosity. And she had some issues.
She saw a sinister undertone.
She's had some issues there, yeah. That's when I said, you know, no point in coming to the Night Sky Sangha. It's for losers.
Yeah, don't worry, I won't come back to your group either.
Yeah. Anyway, she did play an Om tape, which sounded kind of first like the old Brother Charles Om tapes from like the 70s. And I was like, oh, Brother Charles.
Wayne Dyer did one, just Om.
Yeah, and this one was cool. It had some nice instrumentation and, you know, some lovely female voices came in. And so, anyway, she played the Om tape kind of loud, which was okay, and then read from a script, a guided meditation from a script about finding your genitals in space and finding your sphincter in space. And I was really, like, tuned in with that.
Why do I think she didn't use those words?
No, not that. And then, you know, she was kind of like going through the chakras, you know, finding everything in space and the space of the space and the space of the space, space, space. And I wasn't tracking the meditation so much, but I got so stoned on the Om tape. I was like, I couldn't even speak. So I think maybe I did it. You know, I did the meta creation. Though I wasn't interested in meta creating anything. So then after the meditation, you know, she was asking people how they felt, and I couldn't put together two sticks. I mean, I was just like, whoa. So at some point I was capable of speaking, and lent a few more comments that were, again, cordially refuted. And that was that. You know, I thanked her. I gave my $10. And, you know, left. And then I wrote her a thank you note, which she responded to the way she responded to it.
You can't even be nice to people, huh?
I can't even be nice to people. So I just said something like, it appears you're very well defended and you must need to be. No. I said, you know, I like anything. And there's really no point in doing what coming to see us because it's for losers. You know, she has worked with, amongst others, you know, Dispenza from What the Bleep, who's a real manifester.
Oh, Joe Dispenza?
Yeah, he's a manifester kind of guy.
With him?
I guess.
Oh.
And also a local guy, Jeff Carrera, who's an ex Andrew Cohen cult devotee, who has had some spiritual experiences and has, you know, worked with other kinds of New Age figures in the business when it comes to, like, evolvement and, you know, things of this kind. So she's on that path of well-honed positivity. Yeah. I said to her, you know, I think after the meditation, I said, if, you know, you try to idealize spiritual states or even the slightest interest in creating anything, there's suffering. And she quipped back that without skipping a beat, I don't suffer. Suffering is a choice.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I'm in over my head.
Wow.
Totally over my head. So, you know, that's why I was like, where are you going to go? I mean, she's got this wrapped up tight.
Should have kicked her.
How do you feel now?
Did that hurt?
When I mentioned a little bit of the story to my acupuncturist, she looked at me and frowned and said, I suffer every day. I said, yeah, welcome to the party. Who gets off saying I don't suffer? Suffering's a choice. I mean, I didn't even know how to reply to that.
Somebody's arrogant and in serious denial.
Laughter was not the only appropriate response.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if you want to build something and create something and enroll people in that something, well, there's a lot of pressure on you. You know, even if it's the gift of the work or drumming or doing this.
Well, if you've got expectations, it's pressure. If you're going without really holding on to much.
All this pressure, right?
Used to be pressure.
For getting it right, becoming, being of service, having a cosmology, defending that cosmology. You know, all that stuff. And it's like, just how about like be nobody going nowhere? But I mean, if you're a life coach, then you're getting paid to be positively enthusiastic and see everyone in the best possible light, and you wouldn't be seen criticizing anything, even if it were, you know, perhaps constructive. So it's just a different wavelength, you know, kind of thing.
Easier way, for sure.
Well, you know, if this is about something, A, we're in trouble.
A lot of trouble.
A lot of trouble. And B, now we're under the pressure of having to get it, you know, right somehow. Right? Which just continues to contribute to the, you know, the hubris of individuation.
You're free to fail.
Absolutely.
You're free to fall flat on your face.
Yeah.
And suffer.
Oh. Yeah. Knock it out of the park.
So
But ironically, there's actually less suffering. You're not holding on so tight to supposed to be certain.
The nourishment of present experience relieved from narrative and anthropomorphization. Well, that's that. This is this. Sovereignty is not winning. If there's nothing other than you, well, then you're the lottery winner without a dime. And everything that arises and the way that it arises is, you know, it's a gift. Right? Oh. Why outthink reality? Why outcreate reality? Why assume the mantle of a past, a present, and a future that you should do something about? Do something with. This, you know, habituation to restlessness, time becoming, defending, securing, you know, this animation can't be denied. Consciousness is very demanding. It's imposing. So we, you know, launch into individuation and perpetuity and boundaries with really no effort. And since everyone else appears to be doing it, well, then it starts to smell like the right way to go. The accumulation of knowledge is not going to help. The adoption of a cosmology that places you in a subservient position to God is not going to help. Meta-creation is not going to help.
It's like one of the guys who's involved in Sophia creating the AI. He's like really mm-hmm. one of the main people uh-huh. really interested in creating the singularity and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
He thinks he's going to do it to evolve his own consciousness. I mean, he's got Buddhism and all this stuff thrown in there.
Yeah.
And that somehow by gaining that perspective or knowledge, that's going to expand his
right.
consciousness.
Yeah.
Very yeah. interesting. It's like talk about trying to get more
sure.
more data to
right.
in order to expand. Like you're looking in only one. One place, you know, one dimension.
Mm-hmm. Whatever conclusion we seem to reach as concerns our existence or our consciousness, our condition, and then reaching our so-called full potential is just going to be a disappointing reflection. Fulfillment that is dependent upon something, someone, including myself, is no fulfillment at all. The nature of self-referencing has us identified with body, mind, birth, coordinates, and the more of this. No? Yeah.
So it's identifying with sweet, gooey things.
Oh, well.
Vegan exotic fruits.
That makes sense, at least.
Suspect.
You were suspect.
I know.
Yeah, just imagine what everything in the grocery store is saying about us as we're wandering through.
Well, that's what that great movie was.
That's right.
What movie?
Oh, Sausage Party.
Oh, Sausage Party?
It was a very sophisticated movie about
the
grocery store items and how they feel about us.
I could not believe.
Oh, jeez.
Well, yeah, they find out what's going on,
It was Randy.
It was
Cosmic. It was Randy and Cosmic. Like this is.
Right, yeah. It helps if you have a little bit of marijuana.
Everything does. Everything goes better with THC.
Nope.
We start from a so-called foundation of incredible presumptions, really mystical presumptions, and then go trick-or-treating from there.
Absolutely.
And much of what's out there to be purchased, are things that fill your pillow sack with tricks and treats.
And there's usually no question about it. I mean, I work out of some kind of a level of consciousness 99.9% of my time, I guess, when I'm awake.
Yeah.
But occasionally the 0.01%, this morning, it was like somehow there was something like, I think I'm going to do this, and I realized I didn't have to think that. It was going to happen anyway.
Sweet.
The thought came.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Who's talking here?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who are you talking to?
Wait a minute.
Isn't it strange?
We don't need no stinking badges.
We don't need no stinking badges.
Ask them for ID.
Yeah.
You never ask for ID.
Yeah, as a certain, whether the quietude is premeditated through contemplative practice or sneaks up on you, there's a certain ease, a discontinuity. And then these impressions that percolate up that under, let's say, routine circumstances, we would kind of dismiss or just presume I thought, where there's that space of non-conformity, discontinuity, you can see with absolute certainty the percolating up, the arising of an impulse field that becomes a thought later. And how the claiming reflex.
Later being like a millisecond.
Oh, it's fast. It is very fast. Yeah. Yeah. It gets, if I can make yogic claims, forgive me, it gets longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the baseline can be effortless neutrality, which is what this is. This is an effortless neutrality. There's no restlessness. There's no having come from a place, being in a place, going to a place, setting the tone, strategizing, orienting at all. Yeah, just this, no orientation. And as that becomes more familiar, and we learn how to linger in it, then the space between the impulse and the claim it's much wider. Yeah. And the tendency of the claiming to keep us busy just quiets down.
It appears to be mostly a distraction.
Yes.
Really, if you're very hyper-focused in that realm,
yeah,
everything else is kind of just blotted over.
Yeah. Yeah. This is it. This is the simplicity. The reflex to grapple with or comment upon yourself. This relaxes.
That seems to be the epitome of suffering.
Yes, that's what I was trying to point out to meta-creation teacher. Yep.
It goes into the woe is me.
Well, you know, it can take you to the heights of power and exploitation or...
Yeah.
You know, the depths of suicidal ideation or act. So it doesn't care how it fucks with you.
Yeah.
In a sense, you could say it's kind of like kicking back and saying, go ahead, entertain me.
Like when you sit in front of your TV at night or whatever, and you're like, all right. Let's see. What do you got? Horror, like drama,
fail,
comedy?
Fail.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, one can see, one can sense the inertia of one's identity, you know, it's restless and self-entertaining and it just feels very compulsive. And it's absolutely voyeuristic and vicarious. Because nothing's really here. So the imagination that something is here, or that you and your memories matter, is both a voyeuristic and vicarious gesture of consciousness, you know, kind of considering itself. and then finding an incredible palette of symptoms to say, oh yeah, I know what's going on. No, you don't. You don't, really, not even a little bit. So we remain entranced and ensconced in the apparent continuity or perpetuity of voyeuristic and vicarious experience. And you're like, at some point, it's like, this has got to fucking stop. I mean, who do I have to fuck around here for this to fucking stop? That's why this is for losers. Because of a certain kind of constructive desperation has been visited upon you, you're not ready for this. You're too good. You're too well put together. You're a meta creator. You're a student of Advaita. You worship Peter Brown and his teachings. I mean, if you're still worshiping the person of Peter Brown and his teachings, it's clear they haven't worked. But that's true for, you know, why pick on him just because I love him? That's true for everything.
But that's like a whole branch of yoga. It's a whole type of...
It is. It is a branch. It's an olive branch.
It's a big one.
It's a big olive branch or a fig leaf, depending on what you're trying to cover up. Yeah.
It's too studious. All this stuff is too academic.
It can be very studious, you know, very studied. Uh-huh. Well, that's what you get when if your guru is a geek empiricist that happens to dabble in Western occultism. You know, there's a lot on the plate there. You know, we're like vultures. That's all. This is like a vulture sangha. You know, snacks and leave it alone. Just eat carrion. Keep it simple. Just circle aimlessly, and when you see something dead, just jump on it. You don't have to have a robust philosophy. Just circle aimlessly and then, oh yeah, just jump on some dead meat.
The ones in my neck of the woods are, they just hang out by the dumpsters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hang out with them at dumpsters and they just hang out there.
Yeah.
They're like, so not scared or anything. They just sit there like, wait,
what's
them?
They've accepted you as one of them.
Yeah, one of them, yeah.
Yeah. Just someone the other day was like, these are your friends? Because they didn't look in. Yeah.
No, they're cool. They didn't want you to put on like a red mask or something like that, so you could have like an ugly red head.
I think I was trying to get a picture, didn't want to get too close. I was just like,
hey guys.
Talking to me.
Yeah. 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 So, like, who are the members of your sangha? Turkey vultures. Carrion suckers.
Scavengers.
Roadkillers.
Scavengers.
Roadkill or dumpsters.
Yeah. Now, where does your group meet? Dumpster? Anyone, though. Any dumpster will do. Oh, I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. you know, if you think something happened to you before now, for instance, you're mistaken. You become an accomplice to memory. You become an accomplice to, well, an unavoidable pride.
And just like the linearity, the imagined linearity, that is kind of just torturous in itself.
Absolutely.
It's like, what?
Yep. Yeah, so this is a fairly formidable collapse of conformist reality, of the you know, elements of identification or consciousness which make us proud. Yeah. Yeah, you
take linearity off the table, you can't stitch any of that together at all.
You can't stitch squat together. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, is it possible to abide, which might be too strong a word because it's so ridiculously thin, but in, you know, we'll plagiarize Peter since took a little irresolvability. What does it look like and what does it feel like to abide, rest, presently, in irresolvability?
It's the only choice we got. Yeah.
See?
I mean, there's no choice.
There's no choice.
It's the only, it's,
that's right.
That's the only way there is, really.
I've been at this for a while. I've tried, you know, a handful of things. They didn't fucking work.
Yeah,
they didn't fucking work. They didn't, you know. I mean, I've had a few spiritual experiences. I could embellish them too, you know. But they didn't fucking work. What the hell use were they?
People get so confused with the vocabulary. Because they're hearing it in their old way of hearing things. They can't really put that on hold. I mean, they don't have any resource, or they have too many resources, I guess you'd say.
I think that is more to the point.
Yeah.
There's too much self-referencing and the inertia and loyalty and pride of self-referencing going on. Yeah, that's the obstacle.
And it will sound crazy and senseless, you know, and contradictory.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so it takes some, possibly, I'm looking at that sign, patience. Love is patient, love is kind.
Well,
so patience.
Patience, pizza.
Pizza and
chocolate.
Hanging, you know, just hanging. And just...
Occasional inebriants.
Occasional.
To put the occasional part out.
Yeah, frequent inebriants. Depending on how serious you are about this.
I'm pretty serious.
Yeah, carrion is good. Keeping the company of, you know.
Vultures and dumpsters.
Vultures and dumpsters is really good. Yeah. You don't want to be too prideful about who you think Jesus or Buddha were, or if some, you know, religious authority has placed you in a subservient role to the divine. Like, yeah, I think I'll pass on that.
fully admit this is it, you have to give up the ghost that you're going to get anything better. I think that's the biggest impediment.
Okay. Yeah. You know, depending on the personality, the conditioning, right, the life, so-called life circumstances, they all contribute to a somewhat unique profile of defense. And that's one, you know, getting something out of something is one. Being existentially viable or relevant, being embraced by something other than yourself. Yeah, there's so much great material, right, to claim individuation and continuity.
A lot of material.
A lot of material.
Books just keep coming.
I mean, this is, you know, just to speak fondly of it, this is an esteeming process. But it's a different kind of esteem.
It's like a self-confidence not built around your shitty persona.
Whew.
Thank God.
That's right. You're
it's not reliant you're, on that at all.
Your shitty patina of self-confidence is not dependent on circumstances and events and knowledge and willpower. This is nirvana. And there's no point in walking on water or healing the sick or having knowledge of past lives or turning lead into gold or stones into Cheerios or what the fuck? Who cares about that shit? I mean, yeah, there's a great story of Neem Karoli Baba going Ram, 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 which of course was his, you know, natural state. Ram, 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 Ram. As he and a bunch of friends were in a car about to smash into a lorry at really high speed. And as the story goes, you know, he maybe asked everyone or commanded everyone to shut their eyes while he said, Ram, 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 Ram. And not only did they not crash into the lorry, the truck, but they ended up freewheeling a quarter mile down the road instantaneously. And I'm like, great trick. Guess what? Everyone in the car, including the guru, are now dead. So, you know, they had one, right, one great shot at avoiding serious injury, but that didn't last. Now, maybe Neem Karoli Baba has avoided death since I have it on good advice that he, you know, was seen lurking around, you know, certain temples.
It was the same entity?
It was Leif's story, right?
Well, I don't like to mention any names.
Oh, sorry.
It's quite all right.
Like physically looking like the same entity?
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
I mean...
Tall Gangly? Wasn't he Tall Gangly?
No, he was not.
Who was the one that was Tall and Gangly? Baba?
There's always some kind of tall and gangly Baba somewhere.
Well, you mean the... Not the...
Diaper. Babaji.
No.
You don't mean the
current.
No, definitely not current.
No, I see.
Boss, he's gangly.
Maybe that's not a good description.
No description is all that good. Yeah, so I mean, even the, you know, even the miracle of love stuff that come out of the Neem Karoli Baba pantheon of, you know, stories and miraculous events, well, that just becomes, well, forgive me, Lord, another hell realm.
Another set of striving. You
know. Yeah, and then, you know, the devotees become all crazy and whipped up and willful, and they're all trying to out-devotionalize each other and sing bhajans better than the next and make good food and tell the same old tired fucking stories about their trips to India and weird shit that happened, and you're like, ho, hum, motherfucker.
Here we go again.
Wow. But that's our nature, you know, right? Celebritizing our own experience is what this is about. It's not so much about, you know, the worship of the master. It's really the reflex to celebritize my experience. She will not be rushed.
It's kind of funny to see how much that, like, celebrity, like, these little horses that I usually say hi to today, when I came up on the thing, there was someone else there, and I'm like, who's that guy?
Was another horse?
No, it was another, it was a guy petting the same
horse. Oh, someone else petting your horses?
And, like, everyone else had said they didn't come over to the fed, so of course I was like, no, these are like my, they just come over to me, because I'm, like, special. And there was, like, a guy there, I'm like, who's that guy?
Where did he come from?
It's so funny. I'm like, you know, just that seduction of, like, seeing it so clearly of, like, celebrity, specialness, but then also just seeing that it's just me and my own little bizarre, not that it's actually me, but you know what I mean? It's so, it's just, I don't know, it's funny.
It's funny to watch the ears perk up anytime a little whisper of specialness comes my way.
Oh, sure.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that's what that guy, like, ruined my, like, hey, they come over to him, too. This isn't good, you know?
Those horses have no discrimination.
I know. I'm like, horse. They have no discrimination.
Theoretically, I don't want to be special, but in practicality, I always want to be special.
Uh-huh. And turns out, you are. You know, the the accoutrements of so-called animate existence are very alluring. You know, you have an opposable thumb, like, watch the fuck out. And you have a neocortex, and you're like, watch the fuck out. And you have this animate urgency to engage, right? To mix it up, to seek for entertainment, novelty, nourishment, reproduction, whatever, you know, pleasure, power, viability, pizza. It's like, watch out.
Add an automobile and a bank account. Rock and roll, baby.
You got, yeah, oh, that's right.
Credit card.
You got a credit card and a time machine.
You're in trouble.
You're, like, in a lot of trouble. Then if you get a job.
And another stationary time machine called your house, which you can, like, have protection from all the elements. And
Yeah.
I got four heat zones. Damn.
Four heat zones.
Cool Pisces, it's your birthday.
Guess if you can count where you put the electric heater, you know, you can have many heat zones.
Yeah. This, you know, this animation just whoosh, rushes up, rushes forward. And then we, you know, are entertained by it, or we entertain it. The day is planned and plotted. You know, appointments are made and sometimes kept. We tend to be irresolvability avoidant. So this can look as if I'm making a difference.
You gotta do some fibbing to believe that one. Gullible.
Well, you know, the Buddha was somewhat of a hack, but he gave it a good shot. You know, pointing out the nuances in the canon and elsewhere of the nature of dukkha, the nature of unsatisfactoriness, is, you know, a really lovely piece of wisdom. It gets very subtle. In that quiet space where you can see an impulse pretend to be your thought, right? In that kind of quiet space, you can see the imposition of consciousness. Right?
It's audacious.
It is audacious. It is outrageous. Outrageous and audacious. Yeah. So it's very challenging, yes, to let's use the word refuse.
Yeah.
Remarkably challenging to refuse. And it turns out that some freedom from the audacity of consciousness is not a refusal. Really. It's some other kind of, you know, magical gesture.
Well, you know, that's not to say that if one could become thoughtless, as in Gary Weber thoughtless,
right?
That your natural inclinations would necessarily deliver you to a wonderful realm.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the whole nature of the id and all that jazz, you know.
Of course.
So, you know, it seems like there's this something else, this purgatory. There's this something that's not just impulse.
Yeah.
And, you know, tricks you into thinking you thought of this idea.
Uh-huh.
But it's not just this impulse either, you know.
No.
I mean, it just witnessing the miracle of the impulse turning into a thought.
Yes. Uh-huh.
There's something there.
Oh, wow.
You know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's about as far as I can go right now.
That's far enough. I don't think there's much, you know, there's much subtler than that. That's worth recording. You know, a trajectory of ruination, which of course few are interested in, opens these subtle realms of self-observation. As you start, you know, falling through the mystique of ownership and claim. The whatever this is so potently capable of fooling itself But strangely, that same potency, through whatever means, and who knows if there are any means, is capable of seeing through its own magical capacity to fool itself.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's so strange, because it's not like you can take personal credit for it.
That's right.
In a sense, you're being gifted. One is being gifted with a nuanced quality of, you know, observation or availability.
An impersonal observation.
Very impersonal, yes. Yeah, very impersonal. And you could say, you know, in the, whether it's the Sufi or whatever model, that is the journey of, quote, purification. Yeah. But it's so subtle that it's not a purification that you could, that you could will through a mono diet or fasting or, you know, 40 nights and days in a circle in the desert or any kind of heroic means. It's just that the incredible ruse of consciousness, when it's kind of done with you, you become privy now to a realm of nuanced observation that you were just not permitted to see prior, through no particular reason, not having anything to do with grace or ownership or having earned it or really nothing at all. I mean, we're all on autopilot here in this weird self-esteeming, you know, circle. And this thing is like, I'm done with those fuckers. I will permit them to see that they've had the wool pulled over their eyes. You can't say more about it than that. It certainly has nothing to do with, you know, one's earnestness.
It's like going lucid in a dream. Whenever, in my experience anyway, I wouldn't have a clue if I did do something. You know what I mean? You just wake up and then you're like, what the fuck's going on here? What the fuck is this?
Exactly. What the fuck is this? Yeah, and these, you know, little gifts, these observations, they may be quite fleeting, you know, because in so-called clock time, they're not measurable.
Right.
And yet, the depth of it is it's indelible. Yeah, something really, you could say, big, though really tiny, and I'm not really quite sure, has changed. And, boof. And that's what this does. Yeah, it fools itself. And for some strange reason, which is no reason at all, the hoodwinking starts to shift. And so do you. Before that weird grace or gift occurs, you can't convince anybody of anything. No matter how adroit, loquacious, or heartrending your offering might be, it just won't sink in unless the receiver has been invited into, you know, ruination. Then you're, let's say, less afraid, and the thirst to unravel the ruse of oneself grows sufficiently strong that you're willing to take some risks to see how it goes. And once you're a little more accustomed to it, as your own ruination makes some progress, then you could say you become transparent to yourself And of course, other so-called people likewise are transparent to you. You've had a few encounters with being so zero that you know you're a fool. No one will ever convince you otherwise. And you can see the pride of the fool that others may still be harboring. Yeah.
It's kind of funny that the more you see it in yourself, the more apt you'll be able to see it in other people. You can't see it in other people unless you start to see it in yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a certain, you know, kind of wink, wink, playfulness or undefendedness when consciousness has revealed to you some taste of zero.
I wonder if having a life spiritual seeking makes any real difference, any relevance to that.
They just, the accoutrements, clumsy and woeful accoutrements of spiritual seeking appear to coincide with the invitation to ruination. That spiritual seeking, is that all causal? No. That's just not the case. But if you've, through no effort of your own, slid over the event horizon of ruination, then commonly some kind of spiritual seeking might appear in your life journey. Yeah. Yeah. You know, ashram living.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of people that have lived in nature and can just hang with nature, just, you know.
Sure.
And they have probably no words at all, no real thought process about any of this stuff.
Yes.
And it's just like, you know, good Catholics that like to go to Mass,
yeah.
You know. And mm-hmm. they like to just, you know, they think, well, I don't know, but it seems to work for me. You know, it's nice, you know. Yeah. I mean, I know people like.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that's their way. But as far as it coming in and making a conscious, you know, like seeing it in a conscious level, like, yeah, that's actually something. It's nothing. And that's the something, you know. I guess maybe they're just thinking that it's a mystery, you know. And it is.
You get an A-plus for useless gibberish. I think you've arrived.
I didn't really stay there. I was like, say what I was following. Yeah,
I think this guy's arrived. He appears to be fully baked to me.
As well as I follow you.
Yeah, exactly. What frightens me is I think I understand what you were saying.
Actually, in this group, it's better if you don't understand what you're saying. That's just like, okay.
That's a bad joke.
We're goofy. We're just like goofy dolphins. So long, and thanks for the fish. The resonance of present experience self-reveals. and the interloper or interloping doesn't cross the picket line.
Like behind those fences when they were trying to fence people in that had Ebola?
Yes. That's right. Enlightenment is a lot like an Ebola quarantine.
For people don't pretend they're going to seek Ebola.
Yeah, exactly.
Like really just steer clear of it.
Uh-huh. And even, you know, this like enlightenment thing is so messy. You know, it's seen as a kind of a, you know, a win of some kind or an acquirement, an accomplishment, or this gentleman I was corresponding with, something that comes about through circumstances or purported shift in consciousness. Guess what? There's no shift in consciousness. There's just not. Don't look for a shift in consciousness. All you're going to find is the hubris of your own imagination.
More consciousness.
You're going to just find more lies, more consciousness.
Turtles all the way down.
Turtles all the way down. Right. Scavengers all the way down. This is the, you know, the myth of the so-called enlightened meat. You know, one who what? Enjoys things a certain way that might make me and has envious of, you know, your way of enjoying life. It's not a good idea. That whole enlightenment thing is not a good idea.
Do people even know what they mean when they say enlightenment?
Nobody does. And those that might have, let's say, a more lucid understanding, if they had any fucking sense, you know, they don't use the word. No claim is made.
Hey, it's written on kombucha bottles. Come on. Like...
Well, that's where it belongs.
Yeah, it's a marketing meme. That's all it is.
That's all it is.
It's bantered about everywhere now.
Like organic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Enlightened organic.
That's the new thing now, enlightened.
What a little bit troubled me about how expertly my host on Tuesday was using, you know, New Age and non-duality and so-called meta-creation speak to misrepresent things with aplomb, with, you know, a prodigious confidence. And I was like, oh, it's really gone to shit now, hasn't it? You know, fucking life coaches are like using enlightenment and non-duality as part of their offerings.
It seems to be the standard thing.
And I was like, this is a sad day. But okay, that, you know, it's unavoidable, right? You turn the corner, you know, a little bit at a time. Sneaks up on you. Consciousness lets you go. Leaves you alone. The audacity and the imposition of self-referencing starts to deplete. And you're not having a spiritual experience. There's no need to make any claim. I mean, why would you want to be one with the universe? Who cares? Universe, shmooniverse. I was one with the universe. Ew. Like, stand, get behind the fence. You're in quarantine. Who cares? What universe? What are you talking about? So this, you know, this aggrandizement, see, of my so-called experience. It's like, no, please just put that away. Just please put that back in your pocket. It's not necessary to aggrandize your experience. Right. Is that the whole universe, or are you just happy to see me? Are you one with the universe, or are we going out on a date? What the hell? And yet, we're so gullible and so naive that we hear, you know, these extra special stories from extra special people that have had enviable so-called spiritual experiences. And now, you know, all of a sudden they've got, we give them our attention because they've got interesting things to say. It's like, I don't think so.
Now they're really under pressure.
Yeah, really under pressure.
I have to keep it going.
I was reading a little bit of this guy named Oshana, Joey, Tony, Phil, Angela, Oshana. I forgot how I got there. You know how you get places. You're like, I don't even remember getting out of bed today. and there was a lot of come on there. He does, you know, like talks, and those cost, you know, £30 or whatever they cost. And that same old kind of pathetic timeshare sales technique was being used as a come on, you know, to get on the call. So, like, the little videos that he had and or the things that he wrote in his blog, there was nothing substantive in any of them because they all turned out to be ramps, right? Seduction ramps to the paid thing. And I was like, and speaking about, you know, enlightenment in, well, I mean, banal tones. I got enlightened, you know, with the accent. I got enlightened, and, you know, June 24th of 2000 and, you know, whatever. I'd been a seeker for so many years, and my role now is to make sure that, you know that enlightenment is possible and true, and that you don't need to go to this, that, or the other thing to be enlightened. And on our calls, you know, we make sure that, you know, you will have a direct encounter, you know, once and forever, and dwell therefore permanently in enlightenment. And I'm like,
he's channeling.
I'm like, I'm going to have like some Cheerios and heroin now.
You know how many people you could get here if you could keep that going?
Oh, I can. I can. I know. Thank God I don't. Jesus Christ.
And a big curly red wig. Win.
Yeah.
Big red nose.
Yeah, well, I pretty much got those already, almost. So, well, this is, you know, the mercantilism that surrounds our despair and the promises that are made.
It does feel like intense. There's a lot of times where it's just like, is this all we fucking do? Is it? It's just payment, receipt, payment, receipt. What can I get from you? Payment, receipt.
Yeah. Right. Yes, yeah, that's right. Hey, like, don't monetize this. You know, like, take the risk not to monetize this. You know, the universe is giving it away for free. Why should you wholesale it? Become a, you know, middle person.
Why buy the cow?
I don't think there's a conflict between more and other and less and less.
If it's an even Steven universe, like Seinfeld says, more and other would imply less and less in certain areas.
That's right. And that's why we celebrate Festivus.
For the rest of us. When is Festivus?
It may have passed. Or is it coming up? I don't know.
Today, that's why we have pizza.
Yes, yeah.
Well, this is the Night Sky Song of Festivus holiday party.
Belated.
Belated. It's always belated. Everything is belated. I had an idea.
Merry birthday to you.
I had an idea. Belated, of course.
We do it on time when you can believe it.
I had an insight. Belated, of course. It's just so much nicer when the universe is none of your business. Cup of tea, slice of pizza.
Belated Festivus.
That's right. You see, the urgency of animation, you know, snookers us into time, into becoming, into comparison and coordinates. But it needn't. And that discovery is coming for you. In that respect, you know, making a certain amount of, let's say, time for ordinariness or stillness or, you know, relaxing from a compulsive distraction. It could be useful. There was this interesting article. Well, it wasn't that interesting, actually. It was kind of depressing. Interesting in that it was, you know, kind of revealing. I think it was, the psychiatry, psychologically referenced thing. And it was a long list, and I have the link, of 58, let's say, identified human bias. And 58, they had like a unique little word title for each of the biases. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I got like up to 12, and I was exhausted.
I know.
I was just exhausted. I couldn't stand it any longer. I mean, just the 12 had me flatlined into hell. And there was just so much more to go. I was like, holy shit.
And more soon to be discovered.
Process. So I was like, I mean, it would take like the better part of a lifetime, or perhaps several, to even begin to, you know, imbibe the 58 biases. And then you're like, well, I'm paralyzed now. I mean, I'm not going to make a move.
So like confirmation bias, like those
kind of things? A ton of them. I mean, one was weirder than the next. And
I'm going to have to read this.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like interesting.
Were there things like bias toward eating and bias toward being with other humans? Like
all kinds of 58 of them.
Bias toward defecating. Bodily stuff as well as
mental, bodily, group process. Things that are, let's just say, understood commonly accompanying human behavior. And for the most part, we are absolutely clueless, right, of the presence or functioning of these biases. As you pointed out, we're kind of clueless of how subtly impulse made of nothing turns into a non-dual apperception, then a thought, then a claim of I as the thinker. Yeah. So in the same way, I was like, I'm not going to talk to anybody. I'm not even going to go near my keyboard. You know, but it was just, I was paralyzed. And I had only gotten up to 12.
Well, how much further can we go? We just keep going on and on and on like that, you know?
And then I was like, you know, well, maybe I shouldn't see it as, a reason, let's say, to get enlightened. Because one of the articles was like, you know, some European guy, kind of another good-looking poser with a nice goatee, created a website called EOF, as in End of Fear. And his workshop offerings and process were built partly on, or maybe largely on, this extrapolation of 58 bias conditions that if you could read and or study, imbibe, and see the activity of these biases arising in your so-called consciousness, that would relieve you from something. And I'm like, that's not going to fucking work.
Yeah.
And also the, let's say, even the codification of these biases, well, you're really just saying how charming humans are. You know, instead of being like a constructive criticism that you could use as a vehicle to be a better person, it was like, we're fucked. We're cool. We're fucked. We linger by dumpsters with...
Nobody does.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I do hang out with the vultures.
Vultures like dumpster. And dumpsters, yeah. Lions and tigers and bears. Vultures They're and dumpsters.
Cool. It doesn't smell too bad. Yeah.
Well,
mostly in the
you.
Winter.
and even as thrilling or arduous as these 58 biases are, in what you discovered, they don't put a dent in it.
Psychotherapy is a long road to hoe, and
as succinctly capable you can become of the nuances of human behavior, is not a guarantee or a gateway for seeing the beauty of nothing at all arise as a kind of a non-dual certainty, becoming a thought, becoming a claim. No. I was like, yeah, your program's not going to work, pal. But that's okay, because he'll make money, maybe, and people will turn him and therefore his teachings into another fetish to celebritize. Check.
Join the club.
Join the club.
Multiple ways to skin the cat. That's, who wants a skinned cat, you know?
That's if you have allergies or something.
This a vulture would not get skinned cat.
Oh, a vulture skinned cat? Made in heaven.
Traumatizing the vegan.
No. So nice.
Good. Feel the crow one.
Ew.
That's fine. It'll pop.
It still haunts.
That's what vegan, yeah, veganism is, just to make up for that one event.
It was one kill.
She's still repenting.
The ties that bind.
I gave it to Donnie, put it on a stick and made a rattle out of it.
Oh, boy.
Oh, nice.
What's better than blowing them up with M80s, which is what we used to do?
Oh, see?
God, you guys are sick.
Well, it was dead. I mean, you know, it was a pigeon.
Oh.
Oh, well, that's okay then.
Yeah, that's cool.
Dead. There were feathers
everywhere.
You know those kids that, like, put firecrackers and frogs and then throw them and shit?
What a gross song.
I don't know.
It was just
the human tendencies.
I was just tagging along.
Was that number 58?
I wasn't the brains behind it.
Blowing up small others.
Abusing animals. Number 3.
Number 3.
Biased.
Abusing so-called lower life forms.
I mean, bias is the same as tendency, I guess. I mean, I don't know. That seems like it's just coming up with some new terminology.
Sure. I mean, if you could call it the psychiatry, the curious nature of, human behavior, the curious nature of conceiving.
The cognitive biases that screw up everything we do.
You found it. You found it.
These biases cause us to think and act irrationally. Says who?
Well, that's just who? Yeah, that's just it. It's like it's kind of a
We're
setup.
Doing it, it's not irrational.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fine.
It's good luck getting out.
Listen.
Yeah, get busy. We need to get to a point where we're all going to slit our wrists before we leave.
Anchoring bias.
It's funny because the absence of linearity is, in reality, the most rational way you can go. It's the most you have the most evidence for it. If there was any evidence, it makes the most sense if you pare it down via all your assumptions and weird stuff.
Yes.
So the other stuff is obviously like, you're just operating in complete irrationality, and then calling, just labeling other things and saying this is more irrationality. This is more irrational than that irrational, because you're just still operating in a completely irrational field of.
Well,
it depends how you're using that word.
It's an impersonally arising impulse field. you know, animates all everything, whether so-called animate or inanimate. I mean, is the Crab Nebula, you know, inanimate? Or is it animate? Is the sun inanimate or is it animate? You know, our, you could say, notion of sentience is just another, right, arbitrary bias. Yeah.
Got to draw a line somewhere.
Got to draw it somewhere.
Well, we can't seem to imagine a greater mind, if you will. You know, it's easier to see the dog mind, cat mind, the mouse mind.
Uh-huh.
But the sun mind, you know?
Yeah. The Gaia mind.
There's some big mind that's going to come in and swoop down and save us.
The AI thing, singularity. That.
Mm-hmm.
Probably going to make us pets. If it even lets us, has any use for us at all.
Yeah.
For Lucky.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping pets, you know, like my dog seems pretty happy.
Seems.
I mean, it's okay. And pizza. I have to do just lick your face for pizza.
I'll do it.
I love you so much. So good to see you.
The prana, as they say. Instead of striking or animating the frontal lobes, the neocortex, takes a cordial backseat. In one system, you know, the yoga is the prana rests in the hind brain. So there are still what you'd call contemporary physiological links between the prana as, right, etheric and amorphous life energy and the construct of a body, a human body. But those are, you know, kind of a convenience or perhaps an inconvenience. So-called present experience, when there's some degree of release from narration, from that reflex of the prana striking the neocortex and then shooting you right into imagination, launching you into imagination, as that reflex relaxes, then let's just say one is less prone to orient to the present texture of experience as if it is arising in a body or the constituents of that body, whether brain or heart or liver or spleen or what have you. So even the constellation of sensations and beliefs that the body, well, they relax.
Like that hyper-focused realm is kind of all you generally, or 100%. In my case, I don't know, focused around the body, around
yeah.
The body and some
Yes.
It's weird that it's so strange to see that, like, it's a kind of a hard thing to describe. It's like you're in imagination, but you're not actually anywhere.
No.
But somehow, just the distraction of it in some weird way mm-hmm. is enough to, like, you pull back all this other stuff that has nothing to do with the body. Mm-hmm. It's just normal stuff. Chair, color, light, texture uh-huh. just starts popping out in some manner that's like,
mm-hmm.
oh. You know, but it's just a weird...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's strange that that can hijack you, and you're not actually anywhere. You're not really.
Yeah.
Sorry.
This is something that if your eyes closed.
No, I'm just saying right now. Like.
Yeah, at present. The. You know, the sense of physicality and location. Well, it's just not as real or binding as we typically imagine it to be. So you can, you know, what do you find if you're, let's just say, open and somewhat quiescent? Sensation doesn't have to be defining. Mentation doesn't have to be defining. The presence of language is not defining. Time or space are not defining. One's belongings, gender, are not defining. You don't place yourself in a position or in a condition.
Because it's like imaginary, it seems to has the power to convert, not that it actually does anything, the entirety of your experience in an instant, which is like, what?
Oh, yes. Well, you beat this to death.
Like 8 million viewers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We managed.
Thanks for joining us. See you again sometime.
Thanks for the pizza.